Hello, this is Chris Yerkes reading to you from the September 3rd edition of the County Chronicle, starting with the first page stories. Villa Grove City Council. Progress on Rec Center Reservoir Police Staffing. The Villa Grove City Council met August 25th for its monthly Committee of the Whole meeting, with Mayor Derek Rasmussen calling the session to order at 6:13 p.m. A roll call found all aldermen present. After the Pledge of Allegiance, no public comments were offered, and the council proceeded to departmental reports. City Administrator Jackie Athey said she will be out for a period in September due to personal matters. She reported the city is seeking quotes to address HVAC issues at the ambulance building and noted statewide JULIE, Joint Utility Locating Information for Excavators, training is being scheduled for at all Illinois Public Works employees. Athey said the Recreation Center parking lot project closed out at $907,000 after the final change order, about $112,000 under the original bid. Recreation Director Bob Ray said the paved parking lot has made a tremendous difference in keeping the center cleaner. He reported that 5th and 6th grade basketball is now under the Recreation Department with signups underway. He added that work on the nature trail and cross-country course is progressing, and the junior high team will host a meet there on September 18th. Public Works Director Mark McSell said summer tree work is complete, with 3 additional trees likely to be addressed in the fall. Staff will undergo a one-hour training on new Generac generators, focusing on monthly cycling and startup. He said cleanup at the John Leon Reservoir is moving forward, that a recent chemical treatment did its job to reduce aquatic vegetation. McSell said he and the engineer, Jake Wolf, are pursuing a potential grants for a boat ramp, docks, and restrooms at the reservoir. He and Ree also confirmed Labor Day to be the last day of the season for the splash pad. Police Chief Chris Tibbetts reported new officer Ricky Riddell is completing ride-alongs with Officer Campbell and is scheduled for field training officer instruction in December. He said the department will incur some overtime in the coming weeks due to an officer's absence. 2 property owners have been taken to court for ordinance violations, and officers will address speeding complaints on Hancock Drive and Possum Trail. Rasmussen gave no mayoral report and opened the floor to other items. Alderman Hooker urged the city to fully support the Villa Grove Alumni Group's effort to revive the alumni dance, describing it as a longtime centerpiece of the celebration. During a discussion with City Attorney Miller, Hooker asked about city liability if alcohol were permitted outside local establishments during special events similar to Champagne's Friday Night Live. Miller said the city would not have specific liability unless an injury resulted from negligent maintenance of city property, giving a broken sidewalk as an example. Alderman Elston asked about addressing houses with gaping holes in roof. Miller advised documenting the properties with photos and sending them to him and attorney Justin Brunner for potential legal action. The council entered closed session at 7:04 p.m. to discuss personnel and returned to open session at 7:22 p.m. With no further business, the meeting adjourned at 7:23 p.m. unanimously. The next article, Tuscola School Board approved new contracts for teachers and aides, by Ben Crane. Editors note the following was omitted by mistake from last week's issue. The Tuscola School Board agreed to a new collective bargaining agreement with the Tuscola Paraprofessional Union, TESPA, and the Tuscola Educational Association, TEA. The agreement states that the staff on the salary schedule receive a descending raise from 2025 through 2028. The percentage moves from 4% to 3.5% to 3%, and for staff off the schedule, 5.5% to 4.5% for the last 2 years of the agreement. The board also approved the adjustment of administrative pay up 1.1% to 5% annually. In the personnel report, the board approved the resignation of Kara Short as paraprofessional and the retirement of Tony Fidler as head maintenance custodian on June 11, 2026. The hirings of Eric Schroeder as the high school's assistant girls basketball coach, Terry Fleming as paraprofessional, Megan Peters as prom sponsor, Ashley Sterkel as homecoming sponsor, and Andrew Talbot as junior high school council supervisor were all approved. The next first page article, Arthur Nursing Home to close by the end of the year, by Marty Yackel. The board of directors at the Arthur Nursing Home, a skilled nursing facility, recently announced that the home will be closing. A letter was sent to those affected and shares of how this decision has not been made lightly, but is unfortunately unavoidable given the circumstances we face. The main reason for this decision being the rising costs of health care coupled with hospitals discharging patients prematurely and the insufficient coverage from insurance companies have created unsurmountable financial challenges. The state of Illinois has failed to provide meaningful support or solutions to address these systemic issues, thereby contributing to the current crisis. The letter goes on to say, we have always taken pride in the care and positive environment we fostered, and we are proud of the reputation we built for excellence. We remain committed to our residents and their families during this period. We will continue to provide support during this transition. Board member John Stewart shared more background and what those involved have been dealing with and stated that since COVID, it's been a negative playing field for nursing homes in general for the state of Illinois, and we've been running short while costs rise. Labor, increased payouts from the state for Medicare, and managed care plans have all added to the shortfall, and you can only run under those circumstances in the red for so long. We're at the point where we just can't keep doing it forever. He also noted that there have been a couple of benefactors who've been very generous and have kept things going, but that is no longer a sustainable way of doing things. When asked about the number of residents, Stewart noted that in recent times there were 47 residents with 53 beds. They had hoped that more residents might be a solution, but that means more staffing and more costs, with the state being deficient in their funding. Costs adds up quickly, and it just did not work as hoped. As of late, the number of residents has decreased to the mid-30s. He also stated that the Arthur Home is a not-for-profit entity and was not deficient in any way with the state, and care was not lacking and bankruptcy is not being declared. The board of directors had involved consultants who said expenses were not out of line. The Arthur Home, unlike so many of the facilities, have been able to maintain independent, but being part of a corporation is not an answer, as those are struggling too with the same issues. As for staffing, the 70 employees in the nursing home side will gradually be laid off. However, some of those 70 people include janitorial and dining room staff who have also served assisted living side of the Eberhardt Village. As long as the residents remain, staffing will be maintained to serve them as needed. The target date for closing the Arthur Home is somewhere between December 20th and the 1st of the year. As for Eberhardt Village, the assisted living side, 29 of the 33 apartments are filled. The assisted living staff will not be affected. There are no definite plans for the Arthur Nursing Home, but one possibility may be to create more assisted living space, which may not look exactly like the current assisted living apartments. Some remodeling will be done with, for example, kitchenettes added to the rooms. The board is looking at this as an opportunity down the road to expand assisted living and independent living, handle the changeover, get on solid financial footing, and go from there without having to deal with deficits each month. Stewart said, we realize it's hard on everybody, residents, family, staff. We tried to give it a runway as long as we could. He also said the board felt it's the right thing to do. It's Arthur. We want to be up front. The hope at this point is to remain viable to serve the community in the best way possible. The next first page article, questions surround accident involving deputy's vehicle by David Porter. A mid-afternoon crash involving a Douglas County deputy sent two people to the hospital last Wednesday. No citations have been issued, according to Tuscola Police Chief Craig Hastings, but they could be coming. He said from the initial investigation, it looks like both drivers were partly at fault. If we cite one of them, we have to cite both of them, he said. He said his department will prepare a report and forward it to the state's attorney office and let them decide. Sue and Paul Wisabati were attempting to cross five lanes of traffic from the Dollar General parking lot to the Save More Pharmacy parking lot, Hastings said. Sue Wisabati was driving. Meanwhile, Douglas County Deputy Courtney Lowe was westbound at a high rate of speed en route to a call on Route 45. Hastings said, judging from the video captured by a nearby business and the impact, he estimates she was traveling between 50 and 55 miles per hour with no police light or siren. The onboard video system on the deputy's car would have recorded her speed, he said, but his department has not yet seen the digital file. He said the Wisabati vehicle became airborne and landed on its roof. Complicating the investigation, Hastings said Sheriff Nathan Chaplin showed up at the scene and whisked away Lowe to the sheriff's office. The investigating officer, Heath Thurston, was not able to interview Lowe at the scene, Hastings said. Thurston is challenging Chaplin on the Republican primary for the sheriff's office. Hastings said his office was told they would not be able to interview Lowe for 3 days. Sheriff Chaplin disputed that and suggested there may have been some miscommunication. He said the 3-day moratorium is a union thing, meaning that he could not interview Lowe for 3 days, but that would not prevent the local police from talking to her. There is no union protection for that, he said. He said he took Lowe from the scene to get everyone out of the way and that he brought her back after the ambulance had left the scene. He said he did not deny access to her. That's just inaccurate. He didn't bring her back, Hastings said Monday night. I was there, and he didn't bring her back. He, Chaplin, told me he was going to bring her back. He said it was unusual for a person involved in an accident to be taken away from the scene. In 45 years, I've never seen that, he said. I've seen some drunks run from the scene, but that's different. He said, without a doubt, it obstructed the investigation, but added that a person involved in the accident can plead the fifth and refused to make a statement. Chaplin said that Lowe could be interviewed on Tuesday. He added that she went out to the hospital to be checked out. Hastings suggested she could have been checked out at the scene while the ambulances were there. Hastings also questioned why the digital record from the car had not yet been provided as of Monday night. That's all we're waiting for to complete the investigation, he said. He said newer police cars are designed that when they return to the station, the digital information of the car is automatically downloaded. If it fails to download, it can be done manually, he said. He said it might require help from a technician, but he's in Urbana, Hastings said, suggesting that getting the data should not take this long. He said he would seek a subpoena if he does not receive it soon. I think there's something weird here, Hastings said. I don't think I'm getting the whole story. Hastings downplayed any political motive for the brush-ups between the departments. He said Thurston is second in command at the Tuscola department, and it would be a setback there if Thurston was elected sheriff. Yet he's never stood in the way of an officer with aspirations. He said he's in neutral in regard to the race. Chaplin affirmed that it is departmental policy to use police lights and siren when exceeding the speed limit. He said he has no inkling as to how fast Lowe was driving. Hastings said the use of lights and sirens are required beyond police as state law requires it. Statute 625 ILCS 5/11-205 states that the driver of a police vehicle must use oscillating, rotating, or flashing lights when exceeding the maximum speed limits, except when a covert approach is necessary. Even then, the driver must reduce speed to conform with the current driving conditions in order to lessen the danger posed to the general public. The statute further states that if an act of reckless disregard causes great bodily harm or death to any person or persons, that shall be a prima facie evidence that the duty of due regard for the safety of all persons was not met. And she, Sue Wisovati, suffered great bodily harm, Hastings added. Paul Wisovati reportedly was released from the hospital the same day as the accident. Sue Wisovati reportedly had since been released from the hospital. The accident occurred about 2 p.m. Wednesday, August 27th. And the last first-page article is entitled Cronus, Chemical Plant Coming to Tuscola After 12-Year Wait by Ben Crane. Illinois Governor J.B. Pritzker on Tuesday, August 26th, announced that Cronus Chemicals will move forward with a long-delayed fertilizer production facility in Tuscola, a $2 billion project expected to bring jobs, investment, and stability to the state's agricultural sector. Speaking at the Illinois Farm Progress Show in Decatur, Pritzker said the company will build a state-of-the-art plant producing up to 950,000 tons of ammonia annually. The facility, located on 230 acres west of Tuscola, is projected to create between 1,500 and 2,000 construction jobs over the next 3 to 4 years, and 130 full-time positions once operational. This is a major win for our farmers, for our people, the people of Tuscola, and of course, our entire economy, Pritzker said. Cronus Chemicals will be an anchor of the Illinois agricultural industry of today and tomorrow. The announcement comes 12 years after Cronus first signaled plans to build in the East Central Illinois. The project has faced repeated delays caused by financing issues, global market disruptions, and the COVID-19 pandemic. Officials emphasized the project's significance for farmers coping with soaring fertilizer prices. Fertilizer prices have climbed sharply in recent years due to tariffs, supply chain disruptions, and geopolitical instability. Having a fertilizer production facility so close to home will help us meet the rising demands and keep costs lower for farmers, Pritzker said. That's going to be much better for our farmers, especially at a time when tariffs are raising prices. Illinois Department of Agriculture Director Jerry Costello said the impact cannot be overstated. At a time when only 5% of farms in the U.S. will be profitable this year, this $2 billion investment is more important than ever, Costello said. He said tariffs on agriculture inputs have jumped from 1% to 12% in the last 7 months, driving up the cost of herbicides, pesticides, machinery, and nitrogen-based fertilizer. The average U.S. farmer this year will lose $328, Costello said. Anything we can do to help producers is extremely important right now. Tuscola Mayor Dan Kleiss called the announcement an exciting day for Douglas County. It's an exciting day for Tuscola and Douglas County and the state of Illinois, Kleiss said. We're glad to have the governor here to make this a very special day. Brian Moody, executive director of the Douglas County Economic Development Corporation, said the project represents years of persistence and collaboration. Tuscola and Douglas County prove that rural ag communities can compete and win on a global stage, Moody said. This project is about stability, reliability, and strengthening the foundation of our economy. He said Cronus chose the site not just for the infrastructure, but for the workforce and community support. From the very beginning, Cronus approached us with openness and respect, Moody said. Together, we've built not just a project plan, but a really true relationship. The site was chosen for its access to natural gas, major rail lines, and nearby highways. Officials said those advantages, coupled with state economic incentives, ultimately convinced Cronus to proceed with the construction. Mark Densler, president of the Illinois Manufacturers Association, said the project underscores the link between agriculture and manufacturing, the two largest contributors to Illinois' economy. Cronus will be creating the first world-scale ammonia fertilizer plant in Tuscola, Densler said. It's a win-win-win for farmers, manufacturers, and the state. He said the facility will also use carbon capture technology to reduce emissions. Illinois has the industry, technology, and geology to be the leader in carbon capture and storage, Densler said. Cronus CEO Maylee Kamen, who addressed the crowd by video, said the company is committed to addressing fertilizer shortages that have forced the U.S. to import about 2 million tons of ammonia annually. The project will be a major economic push to East Central Illinois, creating thousands of construction jobs and more than 100 permanent positions, Kamen said. He said the Tuscola facility will use recycled water from the Urbana-Champaign Sanitary District and include carbon capture technology to reduce emissions. Nothing can be more important than addressing the needs of our growers in this part of the United States, Kamen said. Farming is arguably the most difficult profession in the world, and it should be everyone's business to make sure growers have access to affordable inputs. Construction is expected to take about 40 months, with the full production beginning in roughly 3.5 years. It may take a little while, but a whole lot of jobs are getting created, Pritzker said. And ultimately, this project is going to deliver for our state in ways we've been working toward for a very long time. Moody said the project is further along than ever before. There have been a few challenges, Moody said, but the project developers feel like the project is on track. We feel good about where they're at. Pritzker said the announcement demonstrates that Illinois can compete successfully for large-scale industrial projects. I know there are people who've had doubts, Pritzker said, but the answer is no, we're not falling back into old ways. We're delivering for Illinois. We'll move now to the obituaries. Barbara Hillard, 92, of Camargo, entered peacefully into the presence of the Lord on August 22, 2025, surrounded by her loving family in the comfort of her home. At Barbara's request, a private family service will be held. In lieu of flowers, memorial contributions may be made to her memorial fund payable to Joyne's funeral home. In a related article, Tuscola readies roads, permits, and countywide plans as Cronus inches toward the start line by Ben Crane. Days after the state announcement that Cronus Chemicals will proceed with a $2 billion ammonia plant west of town, local officials outlined the years of groundwork and the last hurdles between Tuscola and shovels in the ground. Douglas County engineer Jim Crane said the project's fate now hinges on financial close. The company's final investment decision would trigger site work and coordinated push on public infrastructure. We're right up to the starting line. The starter hasn't fired the pistol yet, and that's financial close, Crane said. Once that happens, we know 100%. Crane said his office and the Douglas County Board, the City of Tuscola, and the state agencies have spent more than a decade mapping truck routes, designing heavy haul corridors, and staging road work to move oversized components from the river barges to the Cronus site. The shipping plan anticipates ocean freight into the Gulf, river transport up the Mississippi and Illinois to the Havana area, then a slow roll convoy of roadway through central Illinois. We looked at US 36, CR 750 East, 1015 North, and the Route 45 1050 North intersection, Crane said. Original estimates for a decade plus ago were about $13 million. Scope change and materials escalated, bridges were stiffened, and by September 6, 2024, a revised estimate was for $30.3 million for all the improvements. It's probably higher now. Crane said the Illinois Department of Commerce and Economic Opportunity has committed in writing to cover necessary infrastructure to land the project with an agreement that any costs above the state commitment fall to the developer under a long-standing county development deal. Usually there's a cap. Our happy joy letter was capless, Crane said. And if the state can't make anything happen, the developer's on the hook. It's been in place for about 15 years. The road program was deliberately staged to protect farmland under timelines were firm. Right-of-way has not been purchased. Prime farm ground in Douglas County is precious, Crane said. We have built the network 12 years ago, but it wasn't going to take land out of productivity for a maybe. If costs are higher now, that's the trade-off. Crane expects three construction packages, two state-let jobs, and one county-let segment, with the goal of getting ahead of vertical construction once Cronus gives a date. Realistically, dirt work at the site would begin with the construction season after financial close. If they close January 1st, you're not moving dirt in January in Illinois. Think April, he said. We can start road work around the same time. There'll be some conflict early, but we can sequence it. The site? Crane said the Cronus footprint sits on the south side of the tracks near 750 East, roughly 1,400 to 1,600 feet west of the ADM property line, separated from the long-marketed Future Gen tract on the north. Tuscola gets the limelight because they're the county seat, but the plant site is in unincorporated Douglas County. There's been a huge city-county effort from the start. Cronus previously cycled through two EPC, Engineering Procurement and Construction, contractors, he said, first an Italian firm, then a German industrial contractor, forcing the local team to rebrief and rebuild plans midstream. Permits also timed out during the pandemic and subsequent supply chain shock required resubmittals. Every big permit has a clock, Crane said. Financing took longer than those clocks. When the permit expires, you reapply. It adds time. Moody said that the market remains fundamentally intact. Douglas County Economic Development Executive Director Brian Moody said Cronus must finalize several pieces in parallel, an updated IEPA air permit, a signed incentive agreement with the state, water supply arrangements, and continued land control. At different times in recent years, we've had some of those elements, but not all together, and often in the middle of some global crisis, Moody said. Now the pieces are lined up in the right projects. Cronus and its partner contractors and financiers have meetings in the coming weeks, maybe months, to move this to the real start line. Moody urged tempered expectations on timing, even as he said the objective remains to move the project in the next year. We lived through 2 weeks and 2 months before, he said. There's no good reason to build everybody up that way. This is about showing it's still viable, we still support it, and we'll keep working on it until those involved decide otherwise. They haven't. Moody said the market case remains fundamentally intact. Relatively low U.S. natural gas prices and persistent gaps in domestic fertilizer production, even after other plants have come online since Cronus first surfaced a decade ago. The opportunity is still there, he said. It's also a story of resilience. We kept this alive through multiple government, presidential administrations, and changing incentive regimes because the site is good and the partners are serious. Crane said the state's transportation district has already reinforced bridges along the likely heavy haul corridor from the river, and local planners have modeled signage plans on interstate message boards to manage periodic congestion during superload moves. You'll see congestion in Tuscola alerts on I-57 and US 36 when these moves happen, he said. We're doing everything we can to give drivers advance notice. Both officials said Cronus has pushed the county toward a broader, more collaborative posture on economic development, one that treats major wins in any town as wins for all. The Friday Night Lights mentality, why should Tuscola have all the fun if Arcola can't, has softened, Crane said. A big project in Tuscola is good for the whole area. Some of it even lands in Arcola, Villa Grove, or Arthur. Moody said his office has expanded retention visits across the county, coordinated with multiple towns on housing studies, and is preparing a countywide look at demand and supply to share with developers. Even if Cronus didn't happen, the work we've done has attracted attention from other projects, he said. Developers notice hard, unglamorous prep work. They need local partners who can help them get through it. Moody said the combined effect of Cronus and any additional industrial investment still in the mix would restore payrolls close to historic levels and significantly expand taxable value. The way you keep taxes low is by growing the tax base, he said. Tuscola learned that through the mall era. Invest windfalls back into the streets, downtowns, and infrastructure so the community is stronger when the cycle turns. Crane cautioned residents to expect inconvenience during construction, recalling the 1950 build-out of the Lyondell-Bissell, formerly USI site, that temporarily transformed local traffic and workforce patterns. Everybody's excited for it to start, and then they'll be mad at me for 2 years because it's a mess, he said with a laugh. But we've lived through this scale before. We can handle it. Crane said his team has road plans 65 to 95% complete with right-of-way talks and updated cost checks next. Moody said Cronus's internal decision window is measured in weeks, maybe some months, with the goal of entering detailed engineering ahead of next year's construction season if the company moves forward. Serious people are still working a serious investment here, Moody said. Let's let them finish their work. We'll be ready. Next article, Arcola Museum opens a new broom palace by Carolyn Cloyd. When Pat Monahan first began pitching the idea of a broom palace in downtown Arcola, he also envisioned it as a space for a local museum. On September 5th, the community and tourists will witness the idea come to fruition with the official opening of the new Arcola Broom Palace and new Arcola Museum. The new Arcola Museum is located on the second floor of the Arcola Broom Palace at 201 East Main Street in Arcola and will showcase pieces of Arcola and Douglas County history that will appeal to locals and tourists alike. The museum is open the same hours as the Broom Palace is open, Wednesday through Saturday from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. The idea of a museum is not new to Arcola. In 1999, Joni Gruel Wanamaker opened the Raggedy Ann and Andy Museum on Main Street. Wanamaker was the granddaughter of the Raggedy Ann and Andy creator Joni Gruel. Joni Gruel, a talented and prolific artist and writer, was born in Arcola in December of 24, 1880, and his grandfather felt Arcola was the right place to open the museum. Beyond the accomplishments of Joni Gruel, the Gruel family has an extensive history in Arcola and the surrounding area. Joni Gruel's father, Richard Buckner, R.B. Gruel, for example, was a renowned artist and after moving his family to Indiana became one of the famed Hoosier Group, made up of five Indiana Impressionist painters. R.B. Gruel moved to Arcola with his family when he was 6 years old, and it was here while working with the local house painter that R.B. taught himself to mix paint and create images. In 1866, Arby's brother, John Marshall Gruel, became the editor of the first newspaper in Arcola, the Arcola Record. John purchased the newspaper in 1867 and remained as its owner and publisher until his untimely death at the age of 49 in 1883. The history of the Arcola Record carries on with this newspaper. The Raggedy Ann and Andy Museum was a great addition to Arcola and favorite of Raggedy Ann and Andy enthusiasts around the world, but the Wanamakers made a difficult decision to close it in 2009. In 2017, the Arcola Chamber of Commerce formed a committee to formulate a plan to purchase the building that housed the Raggedy Ann and Andy Museum and reopen the museum. The plan put forth by the committee was to widen the scope of the museum and appeal to wider audience and attract tourists. The plan called for the museum to continue to honor the Raggedy Ann and Andy legacy while offering other pieces of history, such as the more extensive Gruel family story, which provides so much insight into the 19th and 20th century American history, as well as local history. In May 2018, a Walk Through Time Museum officially opened at the former Raggedy Ann and Andy Museum space under the guidance of volunteers Greg and Susie Saunders, Roberta and Mike Grennan, and Carolyn Cloyd. The museum offered the rich Raggedy Ann and Andy history along with local sports, military, and business history, all part of a more comprehensive history experience and very popular components of Heritage Museum. A Walk-Through Time Museum was a growing and popular destination, having welcomed more than 2,000 visitors from nearly all 50 states and 7 countries. But in 2020, a serious issue with the west wall of the museum building was identified and the museum was instructed by the city to remain closed until it was fixed. The west wall included 2 staircases, the only working bathroom, 2 built-in museum displays which have been taken out and then rebuilt since the wall was fixed, which raised the price of the project to $300,000. 2 attempts at grants through Douglas County and the state of Illinois were unsuccessful, which forced the museum to close permanently. But the idea of a museum in Arcola was not completely quashed, and the display cases and donated artifacts were stored with the local fire department. Then Pat Monahan came calling with his idea of a broom palace and the idea that it would become a museum. A new Arcola museum was taking shape with a wide range of history, including the beloved Raggedy Ann and Andy Gruel family history, and will continue under the guidance of Saunders, Roberta Brennan, and Cloyd, along with an energized and new volunteer committee members and volunteers. Many of the displays that grace the old museum have been reconstructed in the new museum, and others are in the works. That is all we have time for this week. This is Chris Yerkes saying goodbye, and see you again next week.